Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor, Katie Galley here, another episode of our Culinary Atlanta series here. And we got a good friend from Handpicked Atlanta.
Yeah,
how you doing,
Katie? Yeah,
hello,
I'm doing
hello.
Good. Hey, John. Hey, Anderson.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Good. Good.
Doing
happy
well,
to be here.
Doing well.
Yeah.
So what's going on in Handpicked? Anything you've handpicked lately that I should know about?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we've been, last week we talked about this, or the week before last, but we've been working with the Fern Bank on this.
Fern Bank.
Yeah.
That's classing you guys up a little bit.
Yeah,
there.
You know,
we
we're
needed
trying.
It too. We yeah. really did.
We so we're working with them to do an adult series. Last month we did 90s night, and so this month at the end of the month we're doing a adult prom.
Adult prom.
Yes, to make up for all of your failed prom experience.
So what's going to happen at this adult prom?
It's going to be great. There's going to be live music. They'll have some special exhibits, obviously, as a science museum. And then there's drinks. They'll have a special menu in their cafe.
And then all-you-can-eat dessert buffet.
Yeah.
It's a really important thing.
Yeah, it's the most important.
Leading with dessert.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The martinis are out at Fern Bank?
Yeah. No. You can still have martinis.
Yeah.
There's definitely booze there.
And then, so you got that going on. Anything else? I know you had the poke folks here.
The poke is always classic. One of the new features that we have about to go live on the site that I'm really excited about is a brand new restaurant called The Cloakroom. They're in downtown Atlanta, actually right across the street from our offices. It's a really, really great restaurant, a really nice curated menu, and a wonderful bar program as well. So we're doing a dinner for two and cocktails with them, and that should be on the site any day now.
And then for those who don't know, Handpicked Atlanta, where can they find that?
Yeah, you can go to handpickedatlanta.com, or you can find us on the App Store. We have an app for the Android or iOS, and that's just Handpicked Atlanta.
And we also stay really active on Instagram and Twitter. So if you follow our accounts at HandpickedATL, that's the same handle for Twitter and Instagram, you can see a lot of our new stuff and also get kind of like insider scoops on stuff that's happening in and around Atlanta.
Now, who'd you bring with you today?
We have Chad from ASW. You know, I like can't say enough how much we enjoy working with Chad. You know, ASW is a very well-oiled machine. They have a great product. They've been around in Atlanta, and I can't think of any distillery in Atlanta that has like a stronger tenure than theirs. They also make whiskey, which is my favorite liquor. So
I'm
really
pretty
excited.
Sure. I'm pretty sure they're the only whiskey makers.
They're the only whiskey that yeah. I right. Is that right, Chad?
In the city of Atlanta, in Decatur, we've got a great distillery called Independent Distilling.
Oh, that's right. That's right. And they are really awesome.
Yeah, they make a great rum and whiskey as well.
Right. So welcome, Chad.
Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit about ASW? How are you serving folks?
Did you say how we're serving folks?
I know you're serving that liquor, but...
What's the operation like?
Yeah, absolutely. So we got our start about 7.5 years ago, developed the recipe for a spirit called American Spirit Whiskey on a stovetop, allegedly.
this is the myth.
Yeah, that's right. The myth, the legend, American Spirit Whiskey. So that is very similar to a vodka, and we partnered with a distillery in Charleston to make it so that we didn't necessarily have to do the full-on investment in a distillery right off the bat. So with the popularity of that spirit, American Spirit Whiskey here in our hometown of Atlanta, gave us the confidence to open a brick-and-mortar distillery. So we started looking about 5 years ago, ended up settling on a space, raising money. The build-out took us to 2 years ago. So 2 years ago is kind of the defining moment in ASW Distillery's history and when we got started distilling. And so everything that we've come out with since then has really sort of put us on the map. So
you started out having a recipe here, just kind of winging it, just fooling around?
Yes.
Right?
Was that with the clear whiskey?
That's right.
That was like a new thing for me. I didn't even know. I always thought that whiskey was brown. Until I met you, or caramel, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's not that well known is that all whiskey, when it comes off a still, is clear. And then when it spends its time in a barrel, that's where it's picking up its color. Well, American Spirit Whiskey is a type of whiskey called a spirit whiskey that was popular after Prohibition ended, when stocks of aged bourbon and rye were pretty low. So they would take those stocks that they did have, marry them with some neutral spirits to get them to go farther. So it's just very lightly aged whiskey in terms of the American spirit whiskey. So,
okay, cool.
Yep.
And then, so it's clear or was clear?
It is clear.
It is even today.
Even today. Yeah.
So then you have this idea, the recipe, you partner with these other folks. Now you build the distillery here in town.
That's
now
right.
You're making it here.
And now we're making all sorts of aged whiskeys, brown whiskeys here, everything from Fiddler Bourbon to Resurgence Rye to Duality Double Malts, Americonic Single Malts, rhymes with Hariconic.
On purpose?
On purpose. That was a Google Translate special. We were looking for, we like the Scottish language, so we were looking for something cool in Scottish. Turns out the word for American in Scottish is Americonic, rhymes with Hariconic.
And out of all those, the Resurgence Rye is personally my favorite. It's like a really like accessible whiskey that is like, if, when you think of whiskey, I imagine it's what most people think of taste-wise. But I encourage everybody to go check out the distillery. It's a super impressive operations. And like, I don't know how much time or money went into that, but like you guys have like a really cool setup.
Yeah, we spent like $50 on the tasting room. And then, no, it's a cool operation. So we're right across the street from a little brewery here in town by the name of Sweetwater. And
little baby brewery.
That's right. We are open for tours Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays, and people can take tours, have tastings. As of September 1st of last year, they can come in and have cocktails at the distillery, which is pretty nice.
What's the orange cocktail y'all do with the orange juice in it?
Oh, it's called the Second Best Old Fashioned.
Yes. So good. So good.
And so what? Take us through a tour. What happens on the tour?
Well, it depends on who's giving the tour.
If the good guy's giving the tour.
Right. The good guy's giving the tour, yours truly, then basically you're taking a look at sort of where we are starting the process. So when we're making whiskey, really what we're doing is we're making grits first, and then we ferment
the grits.
Of course,
that's common knowledge.
Exactly. Yeah. Very
the grits part.
First come grits, then come marriage. No, first come grits, then come fermentation to make basically beer out of those grits. Unhopped beer. And then we use our stills to heat that beer up. So it's a three-part process before you put it into barrels. So we start talking about how we make the grits, or the mash, as it's really called, where you're cooking grains with water. And then we take you over to the fermenters, where we talk about how we're adding yeast to then ferment that mash that we've made and make alcohol out of it. And then we take you up onto the stills themselves, which are really, really pretty. They're hand-hammered copper stills from Louisville, Kentucky. And
they're huge.
They're giant.
Yeah, they're huge.
All told, they're about 15 feet tall. And we show you how we're distilling that beer that we made into whiskey.
And then when you're coming up with new flavors, how does that process work?
Very opaquely. I don't quite know. Our distiller, Justin, has about 18 years of craft booze making experience. He was actually a home brewer, and he owned the homebrew supply store in downtown Athens, Georgia, for close to a decade. So actually, some of the brewers here in the state and across the country have gotten their start with him, or were his customers at one point. So he basically takes an idea, you know, maybe he wants to work with wheat, and he starts thinking about, okay, well, what else do I need? I need malted barley for the enzymes. What yeast am I going to use? And just those 18 years of experience he has, he's kind of formulating a recipe, and then we do a run through the stills. We don't have any kind of small trial still. He just
so you
goes
go
for
all
it.
In.
Oh yeah, he goes for it.
And then so you make a batch of how many? Like how much is it? Like a typical test batch?
Each batch, and there are no real test batches. So the smallest batch we make is call it 4 barrels.
Wow.
So. Which is 300 bottles per barrel. It's about 1,200 bottles of whiskey. Actually, I take that back. Every once in a while, we'll do half that batch. So 2 barrels, 600 bottles.
So that's, 600 that's bottles just to test to go, wow, that's not that good. You got to dump all that out and try again.
We haven't ever encountered a whiskey we haven't particularly liked drinking.
So then you'll find a place for it somewhere.
We've got a built-in customer base in the 8 of us at the distillery.
Well, and also you see this when you go to the facility, but past everything that Chad just took you through on the tour, they have what looks like Dexter's laboratory, like in the very back. And so, I mean, they're like scientists with
we pronounce it laboratory.
Laboratory, yeah. Right.
The proper pronunciation.
Like, I mean, it's very, 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 very thorough.
They also have a really large room full of barrels too, which is pretty cool. Yeah. Where do you guys get all your barrels from?
We've got a couple different coopers or barrel makers. So one of them is in Missouri, another one is in Minnesota, and the third one is in South Carolina, but they actually get their oak from the Ozarks as well. So you know, the Ozarks are Missouri and Arkansas,
right.
Massive oak forest. And so a lot of the wood for barrels comes from there, even if the barrel maker itself is located elsewhere in South Carolina or Kentucky or wherever.
And oak is the common wood for barrel?
Yeah, it really is. Oak is by far and away the best. Now, there are different types of oak, different species of oak. You've got French oak, you've got, that would be Quercus robur, you've got Quercus alba, which is sort of American white oak. You've got, there's a type of oak that grows just in the Pacific Northwest called Quercus garyana. So you can age whiskey in all those different types of oak, but if you get into aging it in pecan wood or chestnut wood or something, you're getting way too many tannins and it's getting
it affects the flavor, right?
Yeah, oak has a lot of sugar in it. So mm-hmm. you're getting a lot of vanilla and caramel and coconut flavors from the wood that you're aging in.
That's so cool.
Do you guys use like a particular kind of oak for your barrel exclusively, or you just get with? Because I know there was like a shortage recently with the barrels, right? Because of all the new distilleries in America.
Yeah, that's a great question. So about 2.5 years ago, the prices of barrels spiked up to around $600 a barrel.
$600?
Yeah, that had to like seriously affect it, y'all, right?
Well, what was crazy is the timing was perfect. We started putting stuff into barrels 2 years ago, right after the price had come back down.
So oh, nice.
The price
nice.
Of a barrel these days is around a little over $200 per barrel. Right.
So much.
So that's 300%.
Exactly.
Get in there.
300% it went up. Sorry.
Yep.
Oh my gosh. It's crazy.
He starts a little unsure of his math.
He starts doing math.
It's true. All right, guys. It is true. I hate math.
So now, the barrels, you can use them how many times?
Well, with bourbon and rye, you can only use a barrel once, right? So a bourbon, you put it into a barrel. As soon as you harvest the bourbon out of that barrel, it can no longer be used for bourbon. So there's some really cool things going on. One second use for that barrel is to age malt whiskeys in them. So single malts from mm-hmm. Scotland, for example. Mm. Another thing you can do in that ex-bourbon barrel is put beer into it. A third thing you can do is make furniture out of it, although that's usually just for leaky barrels. So we actually do all three. We have some of our own malt whiskeys aging in our own ex-bourbon barrels. Really cool. We've got some of our own barrels in the local breweries. So anyone have a favorite here they want to
You guys did something with Monday Night, I'm pretty sure. It was really, I tried some. It was super, super delicious.
Well, so we've sent barrels to them, and then we also distilled what was very similar to their Drafty Kilt Scotch Ale
and
made a single malt out of it. So that's what you tried.
Nice, yeah.
It was delicious.
Yeah, it was really good.
So now you're doing the tour. There's events also happen there?
We have, I would say every 4 to 6 weeks, we have some sort of event, whether it was, for example, this past Saturday, we had a St. Patrick's Day event that the handpicked guys helped us get the word out about. And then
How'd they do?
They had green cocktails as well.
Yeah, we had
actual green cocktails.
With natural food coloring. We didn't go by the chemical stuff.
Wait, what did you use that was natural that made the drink so green?
Well, it was from a... we went to Whole Foods and got something called India.
That's your secret source.
Whole Foods. Yeah. We didn't make our own.
Shout out to Jeff Bezos.
So you Amazon Prime something?
we did the old school version of Amazon Priming. We actually walked into a store.
You walked into the store.
Yeah. That's the most prime.
That's right. Yeah. Super prime.
So now, at the event, was just hanging out, drinking, having a good time.
As far as I know, I was actually not
there.
I was working at an event at Callaway Gardens this past weekend, but the pictures made it look awesome.
And
they also, real quick, I think it's every Saturday, but I might be wrong about that. But on Saturdays, Kevin Gillespie's barbecue operation comes and sets up like a cart and does a bunch of delicious stuff, right?
You got it. So Kevin Gillespie has Gun Show, has Revival. He also, lesser known, he has a barbecue and sort of catering company called Terminus City Barbecue.
That's right.
And they, like you just said, every Saturday they're doing a pop-up barbecue stand where they're doing, the menu varies, but a lot of Saturdays it's whole hog queue and sides.
I was there like 2 weekends ago, I'm pretty sure, and that's what they were doing. And also the lady that runs Game Changer for Kevin Gillespie was there.
At Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
That's right. The, like, I don't want to say the name, but it's basically like they do like a Chick-fil-A sandwich at Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
I don't want to say the name,
but I'm going to say the name.
It rhymes with Chick-fil-A.
Right. But it's super delicious. And she's also a really nice lady.
Yeah.
And she was there. She was hanging out, talking to everybody.
Absolutely.
Yeah. She was
great. We actually handpicked, sold tickets to the Three Taverns Terminus City little joint that they did.
Yeah.
I think it was like a year ago. But anyway.
Yeah.
So educate our listeners about whiskey. So if you've never aren't a whiskey drinker, how would you
start with it being a tree?
Yeah.
Because I remember that's what you did for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So you can't see on the radio, but I'm holding my hand up right now.
Yes, you are.
And so if you think
it looks like a hand.
Yeah, it looks like a hand. There are five fingers on it. If you think of whiskey as a tree, you got different branches on the tree. So whiskey is just anything distilled from grain that is put into a barrel. And there are a couple other more technical things, but just sort of keep in mind, whiskey's made from grain, put into a barrel. And then within that big tree, that category, you've got multiple limbs or subcategories. So you've got bourbon whiskey, you've got rye whiskey, you've got Scotch whiskey, Irish whiskey, and the list goes on. And each of those has different requirements for the recipe or the mash bill, as we call it.
And those are official ingredients. Like you can't have an Irish whiskey without whatever the ingredients are.
Well, yes. Yeah, so the designations are they vary from category to category. So with bourbon whiskey, it has to be made from at least 51% corn and aged in new charred white oak barrels.
Those are the rules.
That's the rules.
There's some rule out there. Some guy's got a manual and says, this is how it works.
You got it. And there are a couple other rules, but those are sort of the basics. And it has to be made in the U.S. All right. So bourbon, 51% corn, made in the U.S., aged in new oak.
And Scotch?
So Scotch...
Scotland.
Is from Scotland.
They have their own rules.
Mind blown right now. Yeah, crazy.
Wow.
I'm a pro.
We've talked before about this. So let's take rye whiskey, since it's very similar to bourbon. So rye is same with bourbon, made in the U.S. Traditionally, and aged in new oak. But then the main grain used is rye as opposed to corn and bourbon. Mm-hmm. But then when you get into Irish whiskey, Scotch whiskey, those have to be made in the countries that they're associated with. And those are oftentimes made from barley. So it depends on what type of Scotch you're talking about. A single malt Scotch has to be made from 100% malted barley. A blended Scotch can have different grains in there. So,
and then what's a double malt?
Double malt. That's, sort of depends on who you ask. If you ask us, it's made from 50% malted barley and 50% malted rye. If you ask a Scotch distillery, they might say, well, it's a blend of a single malt from one distillery and a blend of a single malt from another distillery. So with our duality double malt, we've effectively created an entirely new class of whiskey.
New category.
Yep, where we mash and distill together two different malted grains rather than just blending stuff after the fact.
Now, are you seeing more and more kind of craft distillers popping up?
We are. Yeah. So I would say we're probably about 15 to 20 years behind craft brewing as a movement. And so, you know, whereas there are, I don't know, something like in excess of 5,000 breweries today, I think you have about 1,500 craft distilleries. And it's a little more, I would say, capital intensive to open a distillery.
Is that just because of equipment?
Because of, an additional piece of equipment. So yeah. I've never opened a brewery, but I think it is a little more capital intensive to open a distillery.
Yeah, I think because the process is just like a couple steps further, right?
Well, and also, since it's still totally illegal to home distill, you can't just be coming up with all sorts of recipes sort of.
So it's illegal?
Yeah.
It's like making moonshine.
Yeah, exactly.
So you can make beer.
Yeah. You can home brew or home wine make to your heart's content.
That's just an old rule that hasn't been updated? Like, is there some reason that that would be illegal? Is it more dangerous to make this?
People just don't want to see us be happy.
It's usually the case.
Yeah, well, I mean, there have been explosions related to making spirits. So that's why.
So that's there's some danger element?
There are all sorts of explanations. Some of them involve
that's just what they
theories.
Tell you.
I'm assuming it probably has something to do with prohibition, too.
It very well might.
Yeah, I don't know the legislation.
So, but now it's legal to have craft distillers.
Yes, you can, as long as you have a permit, then you can distill.
But so the reason
the
there
appropriate
aren't a
permit,
lot of
not just any permit,
any permit, right. Doesn't matter. But so the reason there's not that many nowadays, even though it's legal, if you have the right permits, is that it just costs a lot to get it going.
I think that's probably the main driver of it.
Well, and when you have to like put in so much capital to even start it as a legal venture, it probably makes people afraid to invest because of the risk that, you know,
nothing... especially if you don't have recipes that you dialed in because you weren't really able to home distill and figure it all out.
I think of the Reformation Brewery guys right off the top of my head, and Spencer told me that they went through like several years of home brewing before they ever even got into the idea of opening up a brewery.
Right, and in this case, you're not really allowed to be doing that.
Exactly. Right, and part and parcel with that is there are craft brewing schools and a really robust sort of informational environment
online.
Right,
there's like an ecosystem.
There's an ecosystem, there you go, that's the way to describe it. And there's just really not that for distilling.
So this is the Wild West still.
Yeah.
So then... what made you guys choose here in Atlanta to get this going?
We live here.
Just a random coincidence.
Well, what a lucky coincidence, though, because when you guys were starting all this, obviously some of the development and all the stuff happening here in Atlanta had started, but it's not at all where it is today. And I mean, it's a great time to be such a premier whiskey distillery, in the city.
Yeah, it really is. Huge city, lots of whiskey drinkers, and just so happened that we lived here as well. So it's a good.
So now, right when you opened, was it a success? Were people flocking to it, or was this, it took a while to get kind of the word out and get kind of build your own clientele?
We saw a really big initial pop, and then it was partly because we launched in the middle of the summer in terms of actually serving the public. This was July of 2016. And, you know, when it's 95 degrees outside, people are less inclined to go drink whiskey. And so remember, back when we opened in 2016, we couldn't serve cocktails. So it was coming in and having a warm whiskey or a whiskey on the rocks versus coming in and having a mule or something like that.
Now they have really delicious cocktails. I've had almost all of them. They're fantastic.
So now...
John likes cocktails.
I love cocktails.
I think we've established that. The intervention will be happening after
next episode. Stay tuned.
John, put the cocktail down.
So now, for you guys, is it always coming up with new whiskeys, or is it you're looking to expand outside of Atlanta? Like, what does your growth kind of look like?
So both those, really. So we have some of our whiskeys, for example, Resurgence Rye, we have aging in a sherry cask. So that will be a release, a line extension, as we call it, of that particular product. So Resurgent Sherry Cask. But we're also starting to evaluate other states as well now that we just doubled production back at the beginning of this year. And that's allowing us the opportunity to look at other states.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And then when you're working with Handpicked, how does that relationship work?
Smoothly.
But that, like,
thank you.
who comes, like, what comes first? You guys come up with an idea and you go to them? Or?
It's kind of a two-way street. Sometimes we have an idea because they don't know when we're releasing a whiskey, so I have to tell them, right?
Right.
But once they know that we're releasing a whiskey, they're helping us sort of plan out our attack on how we're going to be sort of marketing the event and how it'll operate. And then sometimes with St. Patrick's Day, for example, I mean, they know a lot more about St. Patrick's Day events than we do because it was our first one ever that we just did. So they're helping us kind of put that pen to paper.
And I mean, this is, you know, not something I don't even think I've said it in front of Chad, but Anderson and I talk about it all the time. Working with ASW, this is why I called it a well-oiled machine earlier. Like, Chad has everything buttoned up already ahead of time for us. You know, he's got an idea of what he wants his copy to sound like. He has pictures ready for us. And it's sort of like a testament to how they run everything that they do. But, you know, I'm not going to name names, but not every account that we work with is not prepared.
Every account we work with is amazing.
Every account we work with is wonderful, and we love all of them.
A plus, all snowflakes.
Some people require, you know, they need a little bit more assistant than Chad. And, you know, that might be because he's been around for 7 years. I'm not exactly sure what it is. Might be his personality, but he has more than like anybody else we work with, everything like buttoned up, ready to go.
And I will say, initially, we did, I think, seek out and reach out to Chad and meet with him and saw the distillery and knew immediately that we had to like have him on the site. Again, the best of what to do and where to go in Atlanta, kind of obvious to work with ASW. So, but since the first like real success working together, like John was saying, Chad has just been like the man with getting us everything that we need. And I think we've had success with almost every single promotion we've ever
Yeah.
We have a ran together.
You guys are really good about like doing fun, interesting new things, like collaborations and all that. Like are you doing most of that idea, you know, coming up with collaborations and like what's next for the company?
Kind of depends. If it's an event and we're talking about the thematic kind of element to it, that's, you know, I'm participating a lot in that. And then Jim, our CEO, will weigh in a lot. And sometimes our distiller Justin and other folks as well. And then if it's a collaboration in terms of where we send our barrels next, or, you know, that Monday night single malt we touched on earlier,
right,
that is driven in large part. We've got some of it coming from Josh, our head of sales. Some of it comes from Justin, our distiller. Some of it comes from Jim, our CEO.
So it's like a real collaboration. Like, yeah, you guys all have a voice in the process.
Yeah.
That's nice. That's cool.
And when you're working, it seems to me, because it's craft in the sense that there's only so many bottles of something, right?
That's right.
And then it goes away, or sometimes you do more, or how's that work? Or is everything a limited edition?
Well, so we've got our year-round products, Fiddler Bourbon, for example. And then we've got one-off limited edition releases of those as well. So mm-hmm. We just came out with a Fiddler cask strength version that was finished on Georgia oak that we harvested. So that'll be an annual release, and we just had the release, right? So it's kind of both. We have, like I said, the year-rounds, but then we have some one-offs.
Now, do you have like kind of a, I don't want to call it a loyalty club, but like kind of super fans where as soon as you release something, they're like, okay, get me some of that?
You're really breaking my heart here. I have been waiting to send the email, and I just have not had time. I know who all of our super fans are, and I've been meaning to send them an email to invite them.
Because I get a lot of emails saying, when the hell are they going to get that thing out?
So yeah, I know you do. It pains me. But anyways, yes, we have that forthcoming. I know who our super fans are, and the it's called the ASW Trailblazers, and that'll afford all of our biggest supporters, you know, early access to stuff, the ability to pick a barrel every year, things like that.
I fully expect an invite.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, right. You're not on the list.
Everyone in this room is receiving an invite.
So now you self-identified them, or they kind of raise their hand and say, I want to be a trailblazer. How's that work?
We just see so many repeat faces at the distillery, and it's really cool. We've gotten to not only know, but become friends with people who just are really big enthusiasts of whiskey.
Mm-hmm. And was that surprising that there were so many of them, or is this, did you kind of just serve a need that you kind of was unexpected?
I try to be surprised by everything. I try not to have any expectations around stuff. So yes, very surprising, but also, I mean, Atlanta is a huge city. So it is not surprising in the sense that there are lots of folks who like well-made, delicious whiskey made right here.
I think this is probably true for like any craft movement, but the thing that's still to this day surprises me is not necessarily the quantity of fans for these different craft movements, but like how invested they are in the movement. You know, there are people
for sure
that will drive hours to go to a distillery and wait in line, like a 16-year-old waiting for sneakers for like a bottle of something, you know? And I mean, it's very passionate. Like,
we don't serve 16-year-olds.
just 16-year-old waiting for sneakers, as an example. But the point is, you know, these are grown adults,
right,
you know, traveling, taking time out of their workday, really,
yeah,
you know, to go wait in line for something. So it's always still surprises me how passionate some of these fans are. And a lot of times they know more about it than the people making it. Like, that probably gets kind of weird to be talking to somebody that's a customer, but so informed about what you're doing.
Oftentimes that suggests to me that they may be making it at home.
No.
Which is awesome, but also not illegal.
Right. Not recommended.
Officially, we don't endorse that. Right. Officially.
So now, are you surprised that there's not a lot more distilleries popping up?
Or
you
here
think it's gonna,
or
just in
anywhere?
General? Are you saying that, because like you mentioned, there's a lot less distilleries than there are like craft brewers?
I think it's going to be naturally just a slower pace because
of the expense.
Because the expense, and because you can't really hone your craft as transparently, right?
Right.
As an amateur.
Yeah, exactly. So we are definitely seeing more craft distilleries open up, and we love the more craft distilleries there are, the more chance that, for example, Atlanta becomes maybe a craft distilling destination.
Right.
Right. So we love having new ones open up, and the pace is just going to be a little slower than craft breweries.
Now, is it, or like you mentioned, whiskey, what if somebody wanted to do rum? Is that its own kind of animal?
Rum and whiskey are similar in that they're, you know, an aged rum is going to be aged in oak, just like whiskey is aged in oak. Rum's made from sugarcane or molasses. I love rum. You know, we don't,
I love rum.
rum. That's the hashtag of the show.
Yeah. So to answer your question, it's both different in that it's made from a different base material, but it's also pretty similar in that you're...
So the process is similar, like rum, like what a tequila is the same? They have a similar process?
It's made from agave.
Right.
Tequila is actually quite a bit different. Not only are you making it from agave, but also the fermentation process, to my understanding, is quite a bit different. And it can only be made in Mexico.
So that's a law?
That's a law.
That is a law.
That's right. You can bottle Mixto tequila in the US. Mixto is kind of the plastic bottle type stuff. Mm. But in terms of if you're looking 100% blue agave, that can only be distilled and bottled in Mexico.
So there's no Americanized version of tequila?
We know of a couple distilleries in Texas, go figure, that are making an agave-based spirit, but they can't call it tequila.
Okay, right. I'm going to sound really precious for a second. I recently got a bottle of Single Village tequila. Uh-huh. Have you heard of this? It's like a new thing in the tequila. Like, I guess tequila used to be made and, you know, mixed from a bunch of different villages somehow. Anyways, is whiskey at all seeing anything like that, where like there's a point of pride in like 100% knowing where the materials came from, or, you know, whatever?
I think there is. It's let me go back to rum real quick. So Richland Rum, they're in sort of middle to South Georgia, Richland, Georgia. They are a single estate rum where they basically grow the sugarcane on site.
Right.
So it's the same concept. And with whiskey, absolutely. I know Corsair Distillery up in Nashville has a farm where they're growing some of their own grains. If you're making lots of different types of whiskey, it can be a little difficult to be a sort of farm to glass type operation, because single farm to glass type operation, because barley grows in fairly different conditions than corn. You know, corn loves the heat. Barley is a little more temperamental. And so to have a farm where you're growing all of those grains on site well would be, at least I'm not a farmer, but I think it would be a challenge.
I get you.
Would you have to also have the barrels made there in order to be that kind of single estate?
It's entirely undefined. So I guess it would be however you wanted to market it. Like if by single estate you meant, yes, you're growing the grains on site and you're making your own barrels on site, then we'd have to do that as well, which would be
really hard.
Yeah, really hard.
And then you're looking at really expensive bottles of alcohol.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But again, it seems like these super fans are hungry for that type of experience.
Right? It's true. I mean, I guess you have to have a diversification in your offerings. Like you have to have a certain amount of your resources going to this really heady, like, limited, expensive stuff, and then, you know, rely on your core fans for the resurgence of Fiddler, the yearly product.
Would you then have to grow the tree on your property as well?
Yeah, I don't know.
Where does it end?
Yeah, where does it stop?
So now what's next for you guys?
What's next? So we've got a couple more spirits coming out this year, and I'm not quite at liberty to say what they are yet, but so we've got those, and then we've got a couple states that we're adding into the mix. So those are the two biggest things. Oh, I'm sorry. Probably the single biggest sort of Atlanta-based development is that we're opening a second facility down in the West End between Monday Night Brewing's second tap room, which they call the Garage.
And it's really cool.
And it's really cool. Super cool. Right on the Beltline, and really well landscaped, great beers. And then so on the other side of us will be Wild Heaven's second tap room. They're another brewery here. And then there will be Hop City right around the corner from us. So they're calling it Malt Disney.
There you go.
That is brilliant.
Right.
Soon to be a handpicked Atlanta event.
And that should be June or July.
We'll be selling season passes to Disney World.
That's right.
So now, if somebody wants to get a hold of a bottle or to check out the tour.
Yeah. So a lot of our products are in, you know, some of the real small mom and pop shops we're not quite in yet, but any of the medium sized to large liquor stores in the whole metro area, you'll find.
Like Greens has everything you'll sell.
Greens has everything. Yeah. Tower has everything. Total Wine has everything. City Wine, and the list goes on. Decatur Package. So You can find Fiddler bourbon basically anywhere. You can find Resurgence Rye and American Spirit whiskey in most places. And then some of our malt whiskeys like Duality Double Malt and Americonic Single Malt. Those are in more select stores.
And then can you get it across the country?
Just Georgia for now.
Just Georgia for now.
It's yes. really difficult to go from being a state to like national level as a distillery, right? Distribution wise. How do you cross that level of going national with your distribution?
There are a couple different routes you can take. You can get on with a broker mm-hmm. who basically serves as your sales force in other states, and then the broker helps you identify which distributor you'll be with. So the way that the beverage alcohol industry works is, you know, we're a manufacturer, and then in every state there are going to be multiple distributors, and then ultimately you have the end sort of retail accounts as well, so your restaurants and bars, what have you. So we have to, in any state we go into, we have to find a distributor to distribute our product.
So distributors are the ones that actually sell it to those places.
Correct.
You can't go direct.
Except in a few instances in states that we're not going to be in for a really long time. So for all intents and purposes, what you just said is correct.
Yeah. Right. So you got to have relationships with these distributors, and they have a finite, I guess, supply that they work with.
That's right.
It's hard to kind of break in.
So you've got to pitch to them. You've got to make a presentation to them, and they've got to say, yes, we want to bring you on. And then you've got to support them in terms
of... So they serve as gatekeepers almost in a sense. Yeah. That's cool.
And again, that's aswdistillery.com's website.
It is, yes, sir.
And then you guys, Anderson and John, what you're going to work on some events for them coming up?
Yeah, we have a couple of their products are on the site right now, actually. If you go to handpickedatlanta.com and search for ASW, you'll see a couple of different things.
Americonic is on there, actually.
Americonic, and it actually tastes like a really good scotch, you know.
We had a bottle in our office.
We thoroughly enjoyed
somebody
a bottle
is hinting
office.
That they need another one.
but it is genuinely good, and even like the bottle itself is it was pretty. I kept it. And then
now you know where it is.
I kept it with all the contents inside.
But you know, we're constantly doing stuff. I'm sure Chad has something up his sleeve that he's going to unveil soon. You know, he like I said, he's kind of one of the rarities for us where he seems to know what he's doing and tells us, you know, when they're ready to do a new thing. But like I said, go to handpickedatlanta.com. You can search for ASW and a couple of different things will come up.
Now for Handpicked, share with our listeners, like if there's a restaurant or food, beverage event, or it doesn't even have to be for you guys, right? It could be just anybody doing something interesting. How does somebody get a hold of you and work out?
The best way to reach us is just through email. Help@handpickedatlanta is good. We also have very, very active social media accounts. So our Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, they're all handpickedatlanta. HandpickedATL. And you know, you can DM or shoot us an email directly through those channels. But you know, we try to stay pretty active, so we're reaching out to new people all the time, and we also have accidentally let some of our cell phone numbers on the internet. So sometimes we get random phone calls from people too.
But the business that's out there that's a good fit for you is kind of I don't want to say mom and pop in a disparaging way, but kind of the up and coming person here.
I think the best way to say is like anything that's local, that is locally owned, that's privately owned, that people are excited about, is something that we typically look at and go after. So if you're a small business owner, you've got a product that you're excited about here in Atlanta, definitely you'd want to reach out to us if we haven't reached out to you already.
The big thing is if you care about being a member of the Atlanta community, then we're a great resource. We work with everybody from like the very hole in the wall shops on Beaufort Highway. Like we just had a feature go live today that's for a hot pot spot called China Kitchen in Beaufort Highway.
Super good.
Very, very, very delicious. Only $13 for a dinner for two.
And that's Chongqing, right?
Chongqing. Sorry. They used to own China. But we also work with like Ford Fry restaurants and Kevin Gillespie restaurants and everything in between. So it's not so much like the scale of where the business is at. It's more about like, what is the quality of what you do? And do you care about being a member of the Atlanta community?
Well, thank you guys so much for putting this episode together. And it's always fun when you guys come in here. And that's Culinary Atlanta. We will see you all next time. This is Lee Cantor and Katie Galley.